As part of the Dixie Chicks, my special guest on the show today is a record breaker of 13 Grammy Awards and sales of over 30 million albums. It's my huge honor to welcome to the program Marty McGuire from the Dixie Chicks.
Thank you. Big hello to you.
Now, the Dixie Chicks are the biggest selling female group of all time. I just could not believe it when I was looking through all your success. What success you've had to sell over 30 million albums. Do you ever get complacent with that, Marty?
No, I pinch myself every day. You know, when I think back to our start on the street corners of Dallas, Texas, you know, we were just so young and naive and didn't know what the future held. And I have to say, it's just far exceeded any dream I ever had. So that's great.
A great name for a band. Where did the name come from at the start, Marty?
I'm glad you think it's a great name.
I do. I think it's a great name.
We chose it when we were playing the street corners, and we were listening to the Little Feat song, "I'll Be Your Dixie Chicken, If You'll Be My Tennessee Lamb." Do you know that song?
Yes, I do indeed.
And we just thought, well, we can't be the Tennessee Lambs, we'll be the Dixie Chicks. And actually, we were the Dixie Chickens for about a week, and I didn't want to be a chicken, so we shortened it to Chicks.
Now, with your sister, Emily, who, of course, you know, is also a member of the Dixie Chicks, you started out in a high school more or less in a bluegrass band, wasn't it?
Yes. Our parents were both teachers, and they just got this wild notion of every weekend we would go hear live music at bluegrass festivals. We were living in Dallas, and so we'd drive out to these little towns in our RV and go hear live music, and that's kind of what shaped my musical taste and my upbringing. So I still listen to a lot of bluegrass.
Learned your craft busking and performing everywhere. You could in those days, you know, get a lot of knowledge musically speaking and also about performing. That was a great learning craft, wasn't it?
Yeah. You know, and there were so many musicians that were older than I was and my sister that took us under their wing, showed us how to play our instruments, took the time to teach us how to be in bands and how to play music and be on stage. And I look back on that and I think, you know, thank goodness I was around those kinds of people. My mother played violin as well, and, you know, she'd sit on my bed and grade her English papers while I practiced and give me notes and criticisms. And, you know, it made it more fun playing music than just going to your room and practicing for 30 minutes on your own.
Whenever you started learning the fiddle first, you were actually coming from a classical training. How did you develop your fiddle sound from that?
I started the Suzuki method at age 5, and then when I was 12, I was very into country music. My dad had a huge country music record collection back when there was vinyl, so I guess I'm dating myself. And I asked for my 12th birthday, I asked for fiddle lessons. So I just had a great teacher who taught me, you know, I learned a lot of Irish, Scottish tunes, which of course are all a part of American music today too.
Yes.
And just so many fiddle tunes. I love that, and I've actually gone back to relearn those tunes, and I'm starting to record some records of those first tunes I learned.
Well, that's great to hear that. Now, as a teenager, you actually won awards in the National Fiddle Championships, didn't you?
I came second place.
that was very, very
good. In one national. I entered a lot of contests as a young girl, and one time I got second place in the National Fiddle Championships, yeah.
Well, was that a big plus, do you think, down through the years entering all them competitions?
I think that it challenged me and gave me a goal for something to work towards, you know, because music, when you're in school, is an extracurricular activity, you know. You don't get fiddle lessons in school, so I think it just kept me pushing forward and wanting to learn new tunes and things. Entering the contest, I'm not much for competition, so I didn't like that part of it. I was kind of shy.
You know, initially it was difficult, I'm sure, to get established as an all woman band in the music business at the very start. Was it hard to get going at the start?
I think it was harder because we were playing bluegrass and cowgirl music. I don't know
yes.
if you know what I mean by that.
Yes, I do indeed.
we were very much a novelty act, playing a lot of Riders in the Sky music and old Bob Wills, and it was harder to get noticed because our music was kind of kitschy and not mainstream. Uh-huh. So I think that was more of a challenge than being women. Once we did decide to kind of make the change to more mainstream music and Natalie Maines joined the band, I think it was actually an advantage to being an all-girl band because we were different. There weren't a lot of, you know, I grew up watching the Mandrell Sisters, and so I obviously thought that an all-girl band was something that had existed for a long time, you know.
Yes.
But it did open the door. It got us a foot in the door. I think if any guy band had walked in, it would have been like any other guy band. So I'm glad that sexism or reverse sexism kind of worked in our favor in that particular instance.
The sound of the Dixie Chicks then progressed quite a lot. Was that a deliberate from the bluegrass moving into the contemporary music?
You know, it really was. I think Emily and I had been in bands since we were pretty young. She was 10 and I was 12, and I think it had kind of run its course in a way, playing bluegrass. I think we were kind of cognizant of the fact that it would be harder to make a professional career in bluegrass. So,
yes.
And we were starting to get asked to play dance clubs, more country dance, so two-stepping,
yes,
bars,
uh-huh,
and clubs. And when we got old enough to get into the bars, and we needed a drummer. So, like, to get those gigs, we would add a drummer, and then we thought, well, now we have drums, we need an electric bass. And
yes.
So I think early on it was kind of a business decision to get to play broader venues.
Yes.
And then we thought, well, this is really fun, playing dance music. So it just kind of evolved slowly.
Your breakthrough album, that was a big one, Wide Open Spaces. Take us back to that time, Marty, and what did that album mean to the Dixie Chicks as a band?
It was our first record label album, and we just had for so many years been playing and keeping this arsenal of material and songs from other songwriters.
Yes.
You know, we didn't write Wide Open Spaces, but it was a songwriter that we had known from Texas for many years, and actually Natalie's father had brought us that song, and he just kept saying, oh, this song is a hit, you know, and we loved it and brought it to our producers, and I think that song transformed us and got us on the radio more than anything, any other song on that record. And to this day, even though we didn't write it, it is associated with us in such a big,
yes,
way. And I think it garnered such a young audience from the start, young girls that were leaving,
yes,
home for the first time, and we really felt like we were relating to our audience in that way. We were the same age, leaving home, hitting the road. It's just such personal music for us at that time.
You've actually written a lot of the band's songs, including You Were Mine, which is a very personal song to you, isn't it?
Yes, yes. My sister and I wrote that about our parents' divorce. And, you know, when we wrote it, I don't think we thought that the country world was ever going to hear it. You know, you just,
I know what you mean,
write a song almost like a diary entry or therapy in a way, you know, and you forget that maybe the masses might hear it
yes,
and know all your personal business. But, you know, I also am a true believer that the more personal you can be with your music, the more of a connection the audience will have to you, and that's a good thing all
the
way
around. Well, that's certainly true, because the audience can connect more so with you, can't they? Like, really, your next album, Made the Dixie Chicks, you know, the only female band ever to have two diamond, and to me that's selling albums, you know, that was something back-to-back. You must have been on top of the world at that time.
We really were, you know, to be able to play with your sister and tour and your best friend, and we really are a tight-knit bunch, and I think that's what helped us survive all these years, is having a friend on the road and being a sisterhood. So when we did hit bumps in the road, like we did famously,
yes,
We had, I don't know, some padding around us, something that would keep us kind of safe and connected, and it made the highs and the lows, you know, so much more meaningful, I guess. So all those awards, you know, you get to share them with somebody else. It's, as a solo artist, it must be kind of a lonely place sometimes.
Yes, it certainly would. Well, then in 2003, the Dixie Chicks concert in London, which made the headlines all over the world. Take us back to what happened that night, Marty.
It was the eve of war, and we had decided, we were playing Shepherd's Bush Empire in London, and we had decided to document the night. Which was such a fluke because we normally don't travel around with video cameras, and we just decided we wanted to start filming everything. And I remember us being pretty upset before the show because we were supposed to start bombing Iraq the next day.
Yes.
And we felt like what we were doing was silly. You know, when you're in the entertainment business, mm-hmm. and war is going on and people are about to go risk their lives, you feel like your job is so petty and
yes.
insignificant, you know. So we had heavy hearts and heavy minds, and but we were excited for the show and went out there. And I think Natalie felt like something needed to be said to just acknowledge what was going on
yes.
in the world. And there was a huge anti-war sentiment in London. So we kind of felt like the audience was, we wanted them to know that we weren't just Americans ready for war. You know, since we were America, we kind of felt... We were Americans or from America. We kind of felt like we were representing
yes.
in a way. And since we were causing the violence to start, I guess she kind of felt like we needed to say, hey, we agree with you.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you're getting at. You know, and you felt better when you had said that and all, you know. But, you know, the fallout from that night, it must have been a very difficult time for the band after that time for a while.
I don't think we knew for a while how bad it was because we were on a world tour and we were in the UK and then we were in Australia and we just kept hearing,
yes.
you know, rumblings of things, oh, people are smashing our CDs and, you know, and then family starts calling saying, are you okay? Are you okay? And then
yes.
I think that's when we thought, are we okay? What do you mean? You know, because
yes,
we had sued our label years before, and there was kind of a controversy there, and we had a lot of bad press, and, you know, so we were a little bit unfazed by a little bit of bad press, but this kind of just kept snowballing and snowballing, and when we went home, we actually felt very, very anxious.
Yes. Well, then right after that, the single, Not Ready to Make Nice, refers to the whole political controversy. Do you think that was a very important song for the band to record at that time?
Yeah, I felt like we needed to maybe put our feelings down like we tend to do as artists.
Yes.
To express ourselves through our songs and maybe, you know, it's different than saying how you feel and somebody else reacting to it. It kind of maybe says it in a more artistic way and with more emotion because I don't think people were realizing how much it was affecting us, how many tears we cried over it, how torn we were, you know, feeling on one hand like we had done something terribly wrong, which in hindsight I don't think we had, and then feeling on the other hand kind of angry that people would not let us have our free speech or, you know, so we had so many mixed emotions, and getting that out in a song is kind of the perfect
yes,
way to do that.
After that dark period, the Grammy Awards in 2007 must have been some party. 5 Grammys, including Album of the Year, Marty.
That was a party. I have just a big smile on my face remembering.
Yes.
It was, you know, the Grammy Awards, growing up as a young girl, that's like the pinnacle award you can win, and so... it was kind of nice to come off, very nice to come
yes.
off a very difficult couple years and, you know, have so many accolades thrown at us. That was just a very nice kind of ending to the whole thing. We like to think that that was a time we kind of put everything to rest.
This year, yourself and your sister Emily have formed the Courtyard Hounds as a side project to the Dixie Chicks. It must be great fun being on the road as two sisters entertaining the people.
You know, it is, and since Emily and I grew up, you know, going to festivals and practicing and playing together, we just kind of missed it. You know, Natalie isn't ready to go out full-time. We did some dates this summer, and we'll do some next year, and we do little projects here and there, but we all have young kids, but Emily and I really were feeling the itch to get playing again, so this is kind of a natural way to get to keep playing, and not do something totally, entirely different.
Yeah. Well, here in Ireland, Marty, you know, you're a kind of our adopted Dixie chick because your husband, Gareth Maguire, is from Charnlochan, County Antrim. So we're very, very proud of you here, too.
Oh, thank you. Well, I brag about my Irish roots all the time, too. You know, I think Americans and Texans, you know, in specific, really feel a kinship to Irish people and Ireland. And I, every time I bring the family over there, I could live in Ireland. I love it so much. So I don't know what it is, that underlying sense of connection I feel, but I just love it.
After your wedding, you actually came over here for a blessing in County Antrim. That must have been very special to you.
It was. I'm very close to my in-laws, and it was very important to them to have a blessing in Ireland. We also had a ceremony in the States. You know, it's hard when you have families split by, you know, so much distance.
Yes.
I don't underestimate that, especially when, you know, the grandchildren start coming and, you know, his parents miss out on a lot. So now that they've retired and stopped working, they come to Texas a lot. I just feel sorry for them dealing with the heat. You know, it's over 100 degrees
yes.
sometimes.
Now, you're both the proud parents of three daughters. You wanted children for a long time, Marty, and it was a great blessing when they all arrived, wasn't it?
Yes, yes. I thought, you know, you just take it for granted.
You
think it's just a given, and it wasn't for us. And I do feel very blessed that it all worked out in the end.
Yes,
and I
was so delighted to
grow.
Hear that. You made up a new band, and maybe in future down the line, called The Little Chicks. You'd never know.
Well, you know, the girls, they, even though they're just six, the twins are six and the baby's two, they have a band already.
Gosh, oh, my.
And they've named themselves The Ruffles.
Oh, very good, The Ruffles.
Yes, so I've already secured the domain name, just in case they want to keep the band.
Yes. Well, my last...
There's a website waiting if they need it.
Oh, very good. My last few words to you, music and family, have your priorities in life changed over the years, Marty, being in the band and the entertainment scene and all? Has your, you know, music and family, has your priorities changed now?
Yeah, you know, I think that's why you see so much less of us. Mm-hmm. We're just trying to be, you know, it's the age-old, you know, trouble being just a mom and a career person and trying to balance and juggle doing the right thing for your family and still having a career that you love. So we've scaled back a lot, and I think when the kids get up a bit, we'll be able to play a lot more, but it's definitely difficult right now.
Yes, well, my last words to you is, being number one in the charts or a number one mom, what means the most to Marty Maguire?
Oh, number one mom, for
yes,
sure.
Yes, certainly. So, Marty, I want to say thanks a million. It's really an honor for me to interview you, and thank you very much for giving up your time. And may God
thank
bless you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much,
thank
Marty.
You.